Welcome to the Blood and Thunder podcast of Three Red Kings, brought to you by NTES.
Hello, welcome to Blood and Thunder. Thank you for joining me. I hope you're having a good Friday. It is the penultimate game. Well, it's not the penultimate game. It is the final game of this year's Six Nations. Ireland have a chance at winning the title, but it has the feel of, I don't know, being a bit of a letdown. And not like as in, Ireland haven't won anything yet, by the way. And we've only won, this would be our 11th total win of this tournament. I think our sixth Six Nations title win in the Six Nations era. Not counting chickens before they hatch. That's literally what will happen should Ireland win this game. But I think like a lot of people who I've spoken to about this game this week, just kind of the feeling that when it's not a Grand Slam, it feels like a step backwards. I think that's, look, literally true in the case that if Ireland win this, they'll have won one fewer game than last year. It won't be a Grand Slam. It'll still be, look, a fantastic achievement, you know, absolutely. But I think what people are seeing is the connection between the Grand Slam last year, which was really, really good, the disappointing exit from the World Cup, and then the feeling that Ireland really went after the Grand Slam this year. And even if you were to just fall short by one game, assuming that we beat Scotland, there is an element of regression about it. And I think that comes back to Ireland more so than any other team, bar maybe even Scotland, actually, who I think have probably stayed the most settled from a game plan perspective and a selection perspective since the World Cup. We really, you know, were the team who you'd say were the red-hot favourites for a slam this year. That England game last week caught a lot of people off guard, and it kind of knocked a bit of the Taspi out of us a small bit, because, you know, I think in Irish rugby, certainly since we've ascended to the level that we're at now, I think we can get a little bit too carried away with being the number one team in the world without necessarily having the trophies to back it up. Now, we are coming into this Six Nations as defending Grand Slam champions. We should, realistically, exit as Six Nations champions again. But I think for Ireland, despite everything that we've said, look, I remember when Ireland were shit. You probably do as well. That's fine. But that was, let me just check, coming up on 30 years ago now. So while we can all remember that, and while that was all, you know, very, you know, not, I won't say traumatizing, but we're not at that level. But it was certainly memorable to be that shit and to be rubbish and to be beaten every fucking week and to expect defeat. We're at a stage now where 30 years later, we have our, as in the Six Nations era, we will be the joint second highest winners of the tournament, on level with France. If we're to win this weekend, if we beat Scotland or get a one losing bonus point, we have the Six Nations one. That's the level that we should be looking at now. 1995, 1996 was a long time ago. Believe me, I was there. So it's a long time ago now. So I think that this Irish team, as much as winning Six Nations is a rare and beautiful thing for us, historically speaking, it certainly isn't over the last 10 years or more. So to an extent, I think we have to look at our expectations as a team, as a rugby playing country, and think bigger. And I think that this week, that kind of has come flooding back. Because I think if you were to look at back-to-back Grand Slams, something no team has ever done, you look at that and go, what an achievement. That in itself is not a World Cup semi-final or winning the World Cup ideally, but it's something nobody else has ever done, and it remains so. Losing last week, I think it compounded with the poor finish to the World Cup and left people with more questions than answers. Like, if we're that good, the number one team in the world, all that pressure, all that expectation, how do we fall short again? to an England team everybody was calling a fucking joke and rubbish. Well, not everybody, but lots of people were in the build-up to that game in the first place and over the tournament in general. We have to kind of look at those questions and the hard answers maybe that come from them. But that's not really relevant to this weekend. Here, Ireland have a game against Scotland who are coming in motivated as anybody. Like, Andy Farrell spoke yesterday saying that in his experience, selecting the same team again, more or less, barring injury or whatever else, after you've had a bad result is a good way to get a performance from those players, because the disappointment, the feeling of shame even after losing a game like that motivates them to produce a better performance the week afterwards when they're backed again with selection. Personally, I think that leads to, I understand it, like it's something that I've seen done myself. I get it. I think sometimes as well, though, it can lead to circular logic, as in, well, they've played bad in that game, they're all due a good one in this game now, so as a result, nothing changes. But then when they play well, why would you drop them? We're playing well. So it just seems like elements of a circular argument which will make sure that you keep the same guys in situ. Which, look, Ireland have been doing really well over the last 3 years, I will say. My personal opinion is we haven't won enough in the Six Nations. So look, winning a Six Nations here would be great. That's another trophy. That's what we want. I do feel, though, that in the aftermath of that game against England, which was a poor result, but we've nearly played worse in different games than this tournament. Like, our performance against Italy, I think, was every bit as bad as the game against England, but Italy didn't have the quality at the time to take advantage. So, look, I think there are lots of questions to be answered about this group yet, about some of the coaching staff, that this Six Nations, a win here against Scotland would certainly answer that. A loss, though, all of a sudden, I think things could get quite unpredictable. But I think, as everybody has been saying this week, now again, I say everybody, I've heard a lot this week about how when it comes to Ireland versus Scotland, Ireland take that Roy Keane or Alex Ferguson approach to them and go, lads, it's Scotland, and just beat them. And that's kind of how it's been over the last couple of years, where whenever Ireland have played Scotland, the ball has been moved around the place for around 80 minutes. A few tries are scored here and there. And then in the end, Ireland win regardless. And that's been the case since, I think it was 2017, away in Murrayfield, the bus incident. Scotland won that game. But since then, it's been a complete procession by Ireland, more or less. Scotland have come close, to be fair, in a few games, but it's been a non-stop Ireland winning over and over again has been the main story of the last couple of years between these two teams. And look, that has led to bitterness. It's led to spite building between both sides. Online, the heat is there between online fans of Ireland and Scotland. Because look, to be fair to Scotland, I'm not going to say we are the All Blacks to Scotland, but it reminds me a lot of the way that Ireland and the All Blacks used to be with each other prior to 2016, where we were always talking about how we're ready to beat them, or, you know, when you're asked in the media about, you know, do you think this will be the time or whatever else, you're hardly going to say no. Scotland have been the same, and frustratingly for them, like, they haven't beaten the All Blacks either, I don't think, but they've beaten England. They've beaten France ridiculously regularly. They've had wins against Australia, I think, as well, as of late. Like, they've had big wins over big teams, except Ireland. Like, they've beaten every team in the Six Nations over the last 3 or 4 years, multiple times, except for Ireland. And that stings, and it hurts. And it leads to Irish media guys laughing at Scotland for ever thinking they could ever think about beating us. And then on the Scottish side, if that's all they see, which is basically Irish pundits and ex-pros chortling away about Scotland, you'd hate Ireland too, as I wrote in the Green Eye for this. You would hate Ireland as well. At the same time, though, that streak has got to end at some point. Like, the idea that it can never end and that, you know, Scotland will be losers forever when it comes to playing Ireland just is not how it's going to happen. Scotland will win one of these games sooner rather than later, I would say. And the idea that, lads, it's Scotland, might well be the case when it comes to the result in this game. But I think it's inevitable that Ireland and Scotland, that Scotland will win one of these games sooner rather than later. It could even be this game, which would certainly upset the apple cart. Looking at the teams, which, would you believe it? I've taken off the screen that I had my teams on. Not very smart from Tom Savage, that's for sure. Let me just have a look here at the team. So we'll just go with Scotland first and just have a rough look at their build and go from there. Okay, here we go. At in their back three, Blair Kinghorn, Kyle Steyn and Doohan van der Merwe. I do think Scotland are a little bit reduced when it comes to the quality of their back three. When it comes to Darcy Graham not being there, I think he's an unbelievable player. But Kyle Steyn offers a lot of power winger qualities, as does Doohan van der Merwe. I think he is almost the archetypal power winger. With Blair Kinghorn, who for me is a massive upgrade on Stuart Hogg. He's every bit as good a kicker with the ball in hand. He's a playmaker. He's big, he's powerful. Has been a big part of Scotland's improvement this year, I think, because they have improved. Like, they should, like, they lost to Italy, and I think that's a game that they'll be beaten over the head with for a while. Parts of that game were a bit of an aberration, though, that I look at it again and I think that was a 2 out of 10 result, where maybe happens twice out of 10. If they played each other 10 times, I think Italy only win that game twice, and that was one of them. Midfield, Hugh Jones and Stafford McDowell, who makes his one of his first test appearances here, actually, ahead of Cam Redpath, who's dropped to the bench in the absence of Tui Pilato, who is injured at the moment and he's expected to miss a good number of weeks, actually. Hugh Jones, good player, great player on transition, an aggressive defender. They'll need that in this game as well. Part of their game plan kind of hinges on it, to be honest. But Stafford McDowell is a guy who I wasn't really aware of at all in the last couple of years, you know, because again, I don't keep track of every single team going, but look, he's 26, right? He's been on the go for a bit. He's 6'4" though, and he plays around 105 kg. I became aware of him last time that Munster played Glasgow in Thomond Park, where I saw his name on the team sheet before the game, and I thought, look, well, I haven't seen this guy much before. He has played a fair few times for Glasgow, though, to be fair. But when the performance he produced, unbelievably strong, powerful. I think he scored a try as well. Impacted the game consistently. I think the reason why they switched him into this game for Cam Redpath, even though Redpath might be the more polished, creative player, is that they're well aware of the threat that Bundy Aki poses at 12, so certainly off the set piece. So McDowell there is a direct answer to that in a way that Cam Redpath isn't. I personally wouldn't, if I was Gregor Townsend, and thank God I'm not, I wouldn't be looking at Finn Russell and Cam Redpath as being a very dominant looking defensive pairing off the set piece. And I expect a fair number of scrums and lineouts in this game. So that shores them up in that area. At halfback, they have Finn Russell and Ben White. A really good halfback pairing, to be honest. Finn Russell is a guy who I even found myself the other day saying it, where he'll lose you as many games as he'll win you, which is bollocks. It's bollocks. I found myself doing it. I was on a podcast, I think, or a podlet, I think, one of the two. It's bullshit. Complete bullshit. He's a really good player, a very, very good player. And if he's trying something to make something happen, like, one of the things he's really developed in the last 3 years, I would say, is not trying mad shit when they're ahead by 2 scores, right? He plays really conservatively now in most positions. But his skill set, his ability to find guys with passes off the hand and off the boot, is remarkably good. He's a really, really good player. His goal kicking has been fantastic this year as well. He's a top player. And I look at Ben White as well, another guy. Is he playing with Toulon? A really good supporting player for Finn Russell, which again, it sounds like, oh, he's not a good player in his own right. He absolutely is a good player in his own right. But the way that they pair together, White and Russell, is actually very, very good. And Russell this year, I think he has the most passes, the most passing meters, and the most kicks and most kicking meters. So he's hugely involved in what Scotland do well. And a lot of their game now is played on transition and off the set piece, which is perfect for Finn Russell. That's where he really shines, with a set defence in front of him and an unset defence in front of him. He can work with that really, really well. So if Russell plays really well in this game, Scotland will play really well. And that halfback pairing is very good, very settled. In the front row, they have Pierre Schumann, George Turner and Xander Fagerson, Grant Gilchrist and Scott Cummings in the second row, with Andy Christie, Rory Darge and Jack Dempsey in the back row. Replacements: Ewan Ashman, Rory Sutherland, Elliot Miller-Mills, Sam Skinner, Matt Fagerson, George Horn, Cameron Redpath and Kyle Rowe. There is pace, there is power, there is size on that bench and in that Scottish team overall. As I said in the Green Eye article, all of what Scotland do at the moment and have done well this campaign is the exact stuff that teams use when they beat Ireland. They give you very little on transition. They've become really smart as to when they go on transition, when they attack directly with the ball in hand. And in the likes of Kyle Steyn and Duhan van der Merwe, they have fellas who can buy them time if they get a little bit overexposed on a 60-40 transition opportunity. Kinghorn as well, and Russell, when it comes to their decision-making on those kick transitions, have become, they're conservative. They make good decisions on transition most of the time. What they've done really well is they kick long, they chase hard, they go really hard at the defensive breakdown, and they've got guys coming off the bench as well who are very good defensive breakdown players. They hit hard defensively, Grant Gilchrist in particular, but like to Jack Dempsey, they will fucking stick you in the tackle. So what they will do in this game, I think, is they'll understand that Ireland are going to be a bit skittish coming into this game. They know the Aviva Stadium is a quiet stadium more often than not. They'll also know that if they bore Ireland initially in the first 10 minutes of this game, not concede, but kick long and accurately, hit Ireland on transition, frustrate Ireland there, there's opportunities for them to grow into this game, to kind of force Ireland to overcommit on transition, because that is where they've hurt teams this year, on the turnover. And they generate those turnovers in post-transition defensive play, where they're really good over the ball. Like, they've got lots of really good breakdown players. Andy Christie has one of the highest number of turnovers won per 80 minutes in this tournament so far. Ewan Ashman, rather, on the bench is very high up on that list as well. And in the lineout, they're really good at hurting teams when it comes to the set piece. Grant Gilchrist, Scott Cummings and Sam Skinner are really good. Like, they won't be uncomfortable giving Ireland lineout ball to work with. They'll have seen last week actually as well against England how much our sequence of play can be affected if you disrupt our offensive lineout, which they will absolutely try to do and throw up two pods into the air to try and achieve that. Looking at the scrum, they've kind of gone backwards from what you might remember from Scotland. That's something that's been a bit of a surprise this year. They have lost some of their penalty winning ability at the scrum, although Schumann versus Furlong is going to be a fairly tasty encounter there. But I think that their biggest strength is they won't concede a whole ton of penalties. They have really made their scrummaging game quite conservative. But that's an area for, I think, if Ireland can get a bit of an edge in that area of the game, depending on how the referee rates it, that could be an area for Ireland to get in on. But as I said, like, Scotland will give us and look to try and give us very, very little. When they have overplayed the ball traditionally, that's when their errors creep in and when turnovers start to rise. They've done really well this season when they've minimized that. They're still capable of making turnovers, but not as many of them. There'll be a higher percentage of their plays, but they play a little bit more conservatively now. And that's something that is a big factor in how they look to try and win this game, which is to not give Ireland cheap penalty access. That's going to be the biggest tilting point for this game. If Scotland are indisciplined at the ruck, as they were against Italy, if they get on the wrong end of a few decisions, that will be a difficult spot for them, because Ireland will kick those lineouts deep. They'll have to gamble at the lineout. And if they come up short on those gambles, Ireland will maul them all day. And that's going to be the key point of this game, I think, is that discipline at the defensive breakdown. Because they will figure, looking at this Irish pack, Ireland were disrupted by England's physicality in the tackle last week. Scotland won't be as powerful here, but they will back themselves to get after Ireland at the breakdown, at the defensive breakdown. And if they get a few early decisions from the referee, that could lead to a very difficult scenario, because in the last couple of weeks in the home games, Ireland have played on-ball rugby. That means a lot of rucks, and it also means inefficiency is going to creep in as well. And this Irish team are still transitioning from a game plan that was actually very similar to Scotland's now. I mean, not as heavy on the kick focus, but close enough to it. So Ireland are trying to play more with the ball in hand now, at home in particular. So that's going to be interesting to see how that translates. Let's have a look at the Irish team. It's more or less the same as last week. A few changes on the bench, but that's it. Hugo Keenan, Calvin Nash and James Lowe in the back three. Robbie Hinshaw and Bundy Aki in midfield. Jack Crowley and Jamison Gibson-Park start at halfback with Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan, Tadhg Furlong, Joe McCarthy, Tadhg Byrne, Peter Romani, Josh Van Der Fleer and Caelan Doris in the pack. Replacement bench is a 5-3 split this time. We learned our lesson last week. Ronan Kelleher, Keane Healy and Finlay Beelam are the front row replacements, with Ryan Baird and Jack Conan the back five replacements. Conor Murray, Harry Byrne and Gary Ringrose round out the replacements on the bench. So look, that's very similar to last week. Like, that starting 15 have been given the chance to right some of the wrongs that were there last week. One of the biggest things we can do this week that will be an immediate improvement is get Joe McCarthy on the ball more. And again, that comes back to nine. Get Jamison Gibson-Park. And not just Jamison Gibson-Park. It gets on Joe McCarthy to put himself into the centre of those pods and get after Scotland physically. You know, I watching the game back as many times as I did last week, I just felt he was in that kind of spot on the inside of the pod off nine, where you never get the ball there. And it's like, put yourself into position to carry the ball. Big, strong young fella like that. No reason why you shouldn't be doing it. That's what he's there to do. So that's going to be a big factor for me if they can get Joe McCarthy onto the ball and start compressing that Scotland team. They'll back themselves with the likes of Jack Dempsey, Grant Gilchrist in particular, and Schumann and Fagerson. They'll be looking to try and 2-3-man tackle Joe McCarthy and others to try and stop Ireland from getting over the gain line and, again, stress that offensive breakdown. That's going to be the big factor here. I mean, you can kind of visualise how it would look if, we'll say, Scotland kick really conservatively early, get the ball up the field. If they start to get purchase on Ireland's lineout and force Ireland to come a little bit more narrow and short in the lineout, look, that people might expect Ireland to win this game by default. And look, I expect Ireland to win this game. But Scotland are a team, I think, they play really conservatively. Like, they are more than capable of hurting Ireland at the defensive breakdown. I think when you combine all that with their defensive lineup, which for me is really good, and it's much better than maybe would, you know, seem like obvious in the face of it. They don't have the size of, we'll say, France, or, you know, the reputation for being a really good defensive lineout team like England would. But they're more than capable of getting at Ireland. And we can look at some of the places where Ireland have been successful. Like, our line-out this year so far has improved very much from the World Cup from a numbers perspective, right? Like, our success percentage total so far is 89%, right? Which is just a little bit below the English line-out, which is 92%. We are 89%. Scotland are 87%. So we're doing well, right? Issue for me, though, is that the majority of our throws, like from a percentage standpoint, we've been hitting the sort of the front of the middle has been our sweet spot, really. We have landed 16 out of the 17 throws we have made to that front. It's almost at the front, but not technically. Like, the majority of our throws have almost all come from the hitting it straight at the front and at the front of the middle. Against England, like, our lineup percentage dropped because we missed a few, what I would say would be gimmies. Like, our lineout success in the against England was actually quite a bit lower. It was 77%. It was 79% against Wales. So we had tried to be a little bit more expansive against Wales. We pulled that back against England, but we still lost a few of the ones we really wanted. And again, like, 77%, 79%, we can't, like, that's unacceptable. Like, and I think that the further we go away, like, we just look at the line out distance versus success percentages, right? Like, Ireland are 93% at the front, 94% at the middle. And a lot of that is the front of the middle from an Irish perspective. Once we go to the back, we have 4 out of 7. So we have 57% success rate once we try hitting the back of the lineout. Again, that limits areas of our attack as well. Now, our lineout has still been really good. Our lineout maul is very good as well. We'll be looking to try and take on the Scots there in a way that maybe we weren't able to against England. That could be a difference maker for us. But we don't really hit the back as often as some of the other teams. Like, England, for example, have done a really good job of being, like, they've hit 100% of their lineouts to the front, right? Same with Scotland. Scotland are 100% at the front of the lineout as well. And they're at 93% in the middle. So they understand that, like, you have to keep it tight, right? Like, but Scotland have been far more ambitious with their throws to the tail. And their line-out throwing core is actually pretty good. Turner and Ashman are good line-out throwers. And we look at they've thrown 10 to the back of the line-out, and they've thrown 6 long line-outs. So that's the highest number of, we'll say, the back and the, you know, fly line-outs beyond the end. That's a huge number, a massive number. And they're at 70% completion at the tail of the line-out. So they're more ambitious in that area of the field. And when they hit that tail of the line-out, they are really good at hurting you. Because, like, that's the sort of ball that Finn Russell is so good at working with. And when you look at the compression agent of the line-out, with Finn Russell, with Stafford McDowell, and Doohan van der Merwe as a key part of this as well, they can move you around off that line-out. So that's going to be a real area for Ireland where we need to get at them. And you look at the Irish average distance is 8.2 metres, which is roughly that middle, that middle spot and slightly in front of it. Again, we're comfortable hitting that zone. Scotland, for example, their average distance is 10.2 metres. So again, they want to play expansive off the lineout. We can get at them in that area of the game as well. Tadhg Byrne is the best defensive lineout forward and offensive lineout forward in the Six Nations this year. So we'll need a big game from Tadhg Byrne and Peter O'Mahony, who hasn't really been hitting the heights when it comes to his counter-jumping, which, again, look, that's to be expected to a certain extent. But that's going to be a key area of the game as well. Because, as I said, Scotland won't have any qualms, really, about putting that ball into touch. They just don't want to engage with Ireland on a lot of, we'll say, post-transition phase play, so to the point where it's into settled phase play. And they will run the risk of, if they have to give Ireland 13 lineouts, they will run the risk of, one, they'll try and make those as far out as possible if they can avoid it. This is on the line notes that Scotland deliberately give Ireland rather than the ones that they give up through through penalty access. And we just have a look, actually, by the way, when we look at their total territory conceded from penalty kicks in round four against Italy, it was 184 metres conceded with penalty kicks a touch, which was the highest of the round. In round three, actually, where they beat England, they conceded 229 metres, which was the highest of the round as well. Their discipline has been an issue. And I think, again, their line-out defence is something that we can look to try and get at. But, you know, that it's easier said than done. Our defensive line-out is really good, but you have to be in position to make that count as well. Looking at their kicking style, which I spoke a little bit about on the Green Iron earlier, their average kicking distance is the just under France when it comes to the average kick per game. So they're 33.6 metres on average per game. They have, when it comes to territory gain, they are the highest in the Six Nations by far. They have an average of 867 metres gained in territory with their kicking. That's, again, the majority has been either long box kicks off nine or off Finn Russell. So looking at their... Just have a quick look here. I'm just getting my numbers here. So their pass breakdown from a distance perspective is also pretty interesting. They have the, if you look at Ireland and Italy, their long range passing, as in over 10 metres in length, is almost identical. They're at 11% of all their passes. 11.5 in Ireland's case, 11.9 in Italy's case, is over that 10 metre mark. Wales and England have the longest percentage, or the most percentage of those long passes, 15.95% and 15.89%. With France at 13.46. Scotland are at 13.86. And a lot of that is like Finn Russell finding those long passes on set piece, or when he finds that opportunity. They will pass in their in the mid-range and in the short ranges, and short under 5 metres. Medium is 5 to 10 metres. They're pretty well balanced. Ireland are at 45% from a short passing perspective. That's quite a lot, but a lot of that isn't off nine either. That's off 10 and those little short, choppy passes that we've seen in the Six Nations so far. And as I said, their kick-to-pass ratio is really, really interesting, because there was 2.7 against England. Whenever they've been out conservatively kicked, is that the right way to put it? In a game in the Six Nations, they've lost, right? Their kick-to-pass ratio against Italy was 10.6. Now, that's all buffed from the end game, where they were, for the last 10 minutes, they had 93% possession. But Italy in that game had a kick-to-pass ratio of 4.6. If you look at Ireland, against away against France and away against England, we had a very similar kick-to-pass ratio, around 5 passes per kick against France, 4.2 passes per kick against England. So we tried to play a little bit more conservatively in that game with our possession. At home, we've had 9.7 passes per kick and 10.1 passes per kick in rounds 2 and 3. So when you look at Scotland, they've been in that, like for most of the other games, they've been 3.6, 3.5, 2.7, and an average of 4.6, which is the lowest in the Six Nations. They will give you very little of their possession to get at, is what that means. So when they have position off a lineout, for example, or on turnover, you'll see a lot of passes. That's where they get the majority of their pass per carry rate, because their pass per carry ratio is actually quite high. So if you look at a team who plays low volume counter transition like that, but a high pass per carry average, that tells you they really put the foot to the floor when it comes to transition. Offensive transition off the kicks when it's on, breakdown turnovers, and line out. That's where our set piece, rather, line out scrum. That's where the majority of their expansive stuff comes from. And you can see they're quite good attacking against static start defenses. So if they're looking at a line out, for example, or a scrum, they'll have a lot of detail on what Ireland do, the roles of certain defenders in those spaces, and try and catch Ireland inside three or four phases on those ones. They will generally look to try and attack those three or four phase strike plays once they're around the 10-metre line. Like, they will play from the halfway line as well if they feel it's on. They're not as regimented as what England would be and what I think France wish they had been in the Six Nations to date. But their ability to hurt Ireland on those set-piece strikes is going to be very, very interesting if they can do it. So that's going to be an interesting one to see how they approach that. But I would expect if Scotland play on scheme that they'll be around that 3.5 passes per kick, but their pass per carry ratio will be around 1.4. If they win the game, it'll be roughly around that number. Scotland also have the most amount of 50-22s in this Six Nations so far. Again, a lot of those are Finn Russell, so he has that ability to find those raking kicks downfield. They have the most number of box kicks outside of England. Ireland have 31, by the way. Scotland have 34. So that is a part of their game. When you look at their average kick distance as well, you can see that they're not often contesting those. They are counter-transition starter kicks. They have not as many chips over the top as what some of the other nations have. They have the most amount of long clearances, though, 67 in total, which is massive, way more than the next team, which is Ireland on 51. And they have a lot of cross-field kicks as well. 9 cross-field kicks compared to Ireland's 3. And they don't really do up and unders, but like they have a wide variety of kicks, and almost all of them will come from Finn Russell. So he is well capable of finding those cross-field kicks to Duhan van der Merwe, to Kyle Steyn, to Hugh Jones. That's a big factor in their game. And again, he's stopped really doing that unless he absolutely needs to. If Scotland are down and he's looking to try and make something happen from deep, they will go to that. But that's going to be the key for Ireland, is in making sure to keep the scoreboard ticking over, essentially, which I know is a bit of a cliche, but I think it's a cliche because it is effective against this Scottish team. We have to put them under pressure on the scoreboard any chance that we get. I know that Ireland like to really go after, driving it down the line early in this game. I still think we will, but I think it's a bit risky with this Scottish defensive line out. They will pressure us there. 3, 6, 9 even to start, probably good. You can start drawing Scotland out a little bit in that circumstance. We want them to play on ball. That's where their mistakes will start to creep in. That's where we'll start to get turnovers at the breakdown. That's where we'll start to see passing errors if they try pushing it. But we have to get them to that stage first. I don't think a win here is a default for Ireland by any means. If our sloppy offensive ruck work that we showed against Italy shows up here, Scotland are set up to take advantage of that and make this game very, very difficult for us. On transition, we need to be much better. That was the big disappointment for me against England. We kicked long but couldn't cover. Now, our bench is much better set up this time in case there's any early substitutions that can throw off our balance. We need pace. We need to just be able to eat up the ground a little bit better in those moments. If we can hold them out on their transition starters, keep our patience, kick conservatively and go at them. Again, our accuracy at the breakdown is vital here. We need massive games from Van der Fleer, from Tadhg Byrne, from Caelan Doris, much more active. He will need to be at the offensive breakdown than what he was against England. And to free him up for that, we need Joe McCarthy getting over the gain line. We need Bundy Aki. We need Robbie Henshaw. These are the guys that we need attacking the gain line. Dan Sheen as well, a little bit more involved this week, I would like him to be. Furlong and Porter, we know what they do at this stage. Their attacking ruck work is really, really high quality. But I think if we look last week and we see Ireland being a little bit static as well at the breakdown, off the back of those last collisions, like, we need to get over the gain line, essentially. Get a quick ruck means nothing in this game. Like, it's fine when you're attacking at pace and you're flowing, but we had quick ruck ball against England and it didn't matter. We have to win collisions, get over the gain line, and make Scotland retreat. England did really well in that game by just constantly marching us backwards, or at least keeping us static so we couldn't start taking out their defenders with our cleanouts. We will need that to happen in this game, especially on transition, because we will get opportunities from them. They will kick to us consistently. We have to be able to retain the ball in those moments, though. If we can, there will be scores out there for us, and we'll put Scotland away as we have done in the past. If they start to get a bit of traction at the defensive breakdown and at the line-out on Ireland's throw, this game could get sticky, because Scotland will take their points as well. Like, they won't just gamble and start kicking ball down the line. They will take their three. They will look at the game against Italy and saw we lost that against Italy because they took their 3 points when they were on offer. So I think for Scotland here, they will be more than comfortable playing the spoiler. They will be happy enough to bore Ireland with a lot of long kicking, a lot of work on transition, checking out the kicking of Calvin Nash, of James Lowe, of Jack Crowley, and putting them under pressure, and looking to try to, you know, return that again by just giving Ireland nothing to work with. And again, if they're, you know, 15, 20 minutes in and there's maybe only 3 points in it one way or the other, they'll be very, very happy. And they'll see that as being part one of the job done, which is to frustrate Ireland, quieten down the Aviva, which isn't exactly the hardest thing going. But if they can get Ireland into that spot, they'll feel now we can go after them. And that could be how we could lose this game. I still think Ireland will win, but I'm a bit worried about our breakdown performances so far at home when we have been in this on-ball style. And given that Scotland are, when they're at their best, I would say, perfectly suited to exploiting that, leads me to be a bit of concern. But if, look, we will see what happens after the game. I'll have a TRK radio for this one after the game one way or the other. So we'll see what the story is. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for being a TRK subscriber. I will talk to you again very, very soon.